This is Cross Hope, a daily word of hope and inspiration with Randy Snyder, Senior Minister of Crossview Christian Church. Now, with today's message from Cross Hope, here's Randy Snyder.
Well, this week on Cross Hope, we have the third message in a brief series from the epistle or the letter of 1 John near the end of the New Testament. Last week, we talked about the power of hatred. It's fitting this week we talk about what love is. We know what hate can do in our lives based on what John told us last week. This week, we talk about a verse that simply says this: this is what love is. It's a message that you need to hear. It's a message I need to hear. God bless you as you listen to Cross Hope all this week. And some of you have seen her writing and different things, and I found out things about my mother by reading her writing. There are stories that she tells in her writing that I didn't know happened to her when she was a child. And I'm going to begin with one of those stories that I didn't know happened until I read it in one of her newspaper articles. During the Depression in the Hammond, Indiana, just outside of Chicago area, it was very common for people to come to the door asking if they could work for food. They wouldn't just ask for a handout. Someone would say, is there some work I can do around your house or in your yard in exchange for a meal? It was a routine thing that happened. Here's what my mom writes. One day I asked my mother if she remembered a summer afternoon when my twin sister and I were 5 years old. A gaunt-looking man came to our door carrying a tripod, a camera, and other photographic equipment. The stranger said that in exchange for food, he would photograph the children. I should interject here, my mom says, that her mother was very intuitive. I'll explain about that later. People coming to the door asking for food was not uncommon or unusual in those Depression years, and my mom never turned anyone away. She agreed to the photo, saying that would be just lovely. While mom prepared a warmed-up meal, my sister and I hurriedly got ready. Mother instructed us to change into our best look-alike dresses and to find the curling iron. The curling irons of that era were not electric. They were heated by our gas stove on an open flame with no way to regulate the temperature. As a result, we often had burned hair, but instant curls, which I thought was a great combination. Singed hair, but banana curls. Mom powdered our faces and added a touch of rouge so we wouldn't photograph pale. After taking several poses and eating his meal, the stranger packed up his gear, and he said the photos would be sent in several weeks. Weeks went by when my sister and I started asking about the pictures. Our mother sat us down on the couch and said there's something she wanted to tell us. Girls, there will be no pictures because there was no film in that man's camera. She added that we were too young to understand, but someday we would. It had to do with dignity and pride, she said. For the sake of his dignity, she pretended to believe him. Mom was right. I didn't understand then, but I do now. Many times I've been reminded of it when I've heard or read the words of Scripture, "Be careful, do not be forgetful, entertaining strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. And I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was a stranger, and you took me in." If you were to ask my grandmother when she did that, did you cognitively think that the reason I'm doing this, I want to be a good Christian, and I want to show love to this stranger, and that's why I'm doing it? She would say, "Never even occurred to me." She just did it because that was her nature. Showing love to people was second nature to her, that she didn't have to think it through. She didn't have to contrive it. She didn't have to schedule it. She didn't have to arrange it. She simply did what she normally did, because I want to suggest, and I'd like to think, that love was a part of her nature. What's a part of your nature? What's the most natural thing for you to do in life?
Well, this particular message from 1 John just may be one of the most important messages of the series. I hope you'll continue to listen all this week to SiriusXM 131, the Family Talk Channel.
Today we're going to study a passage in the epistle or the letter of 1 John in the New Testament as we continue this series about the definition and description of love. There is no other passage that describes love in the way this passage describes it. And this passage also, in my opinion, get this, contains one of the most important verses in all of the Bible, not just the New Testament. Follow along as I read from 1 John
not the Gospel of John, but the Epistle of 1 John in the back of the Bible, verse 16 of chapter 3. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Now, here's one of the most important verses, in my opinion, in all of the Bible. Underline it if you do that, verse 23. And this is his command: to believe in the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and to love one another as he commanded us. He didn't ask us, he commanded us. Those who obey his commands live in him, and he in them. David Harkness was a great friend of mine in the ministry. He was a Presbyterian minister in Columbus. He used to give every week what's called a children's sermon. Some of you grew up in a background where you remember the minister called all the children of preschool through elementary age, and they would gather around the front, and he would give them a message just for them. One Sunday, he told me, he gave them a message on the subject of love, and he said, "Children, can anyone tell me what love is? Can you define love?" And David said, not one hand went up. So he said, "Well, let me change the question. Can any of you give me an example of love?" And he said, hands went up all over the room. My mom, my dad. A couple even mentioned a brother or sister, shockingly so. But they mentioned people by name as examples of love. And David said it was a powerful lesson to him that sometimes people can't define love, but they can point to somebody and say, there's somebody who loves. Here's my question as I begin. Is there anybody on this planet that would be asked to define love and maybe would struggle with the words of defining it, you know, intellectually, philosophically or whatever, but they would point to you and say, that guy over there, that's a person of love. You see that woman over there, that's a woman of love. You see that teenager over there, that's a person of love. Would anybody point to you and say, you're the example of love? You know what? We might be stressed to think of anybody, and I'm including myself, we might be stressed to think of anybody that would think of us in that way. I want to bring up verse 16 again as we start this again. This is how we know what love is. Here's the definition of love. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. What does it mean to lay down your life? Instantly, we think of, well, it sounds like he's talking about dying. But it's more than that. I found out one of the terms to describe this would be the word divesture, to divest yourself. It means to give up part of your life for someone else. Let me tell you something. If you're married, you lay down your life for your spouse, whether you know it or not. And I don't mean that in some facetious sense. A husband is to lay down his life for his wife. That's biblical. And conversely, I think it's also biblical that a wife lays down her life for a husband. There's a mutual submission in marriage. We submit to one another out of love, the Apostle Paul said. Parents lay down their life for their children. That's what the nature of love is. If you want to know what love is, it's not these warm and fuzzy feelings necessarily. It's laying down your life for another person. That's what it means. And the ultimate example, of course, is Jesus Christ laying down his life.
Well, we'll continue this message tomorrow on Cross Hope on Sirius XM 131. Well, the best definition of love is scriptural. It's given in 1 John 3:16. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. That's the essence of the message all this week on the definition of the word love. Last week we talked about hate. All this week in 1 John, the epistle of 1 John, we talk about the definition of love. God bless you as you listen.
Ann Morrow Lindbergh wrote a book years ago called Locked Rooms and Open Doors. She says this: people talk about love as though it were something you could give, like an armful of flowers. And a lot of people give love like that, just dump it down on top of you, a useless, strong-scented burden. I don't think it's anything you can give. Listen to what she said. I've never heard anyone put it like this, describing love. Love is a force in you that enables you to do and give other things. Listen to that again. Love is a force in you that enables you to give and do other things. It's the motivating power. It enables you to give strength and power and freedom and peace to another person. It's not a result, it's a cause. It's not a product it produces. It's power, like money or steam or electricity. It is valueless unless you can give something else by means of it. Question: what is it that you do and give to other people because of love? What is it that you do and you give to other people because of love? It's not that you just, oh, I just love everybody and I'm just so wonderful because I do. It enables you to do something for someone else, to lay down your life. Let's bring up the next verse, verse 17. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Leroy Manning was a California grocery store owner who gives sandwiches and coffee to 400 unemployed people every week. Every week, once a week, he hands out sandwiches and coffee to people who are unemployed, doesn't charge him a dime for that, and it's his ministry. Do you know what motivated him to do it? This is really an intriguing story. He said in his grocery store, every day would walk a woman. She would go to the bakery at the back of the store, very poor looking. She would buy one large cookie. And he noticed she would do that every day. And so one day, Leroy Manning was intrigued by that. What's the deal in this one cookie woman? He followed her outside. There were three kids waiting out on the front step of the store, and she took that cookie and she broke it into three pieces, and every day they got a third of a cookie. Kids today eat half a bag of Oreos and say, where's the rest of them? Don't they? Where's the rest of my cookies? In other words, that's all they got a day. And he was so touched by that visual demonstration of love by that woman, he said, I can do better than that. And so he feeds 400 people a week with sandwiches and coffee. Cindy Jackson, a soup kitchen volunteer in Atlanta, realized that many homeless women in Atlanta had no safe place to go during the day. Deciding to bring her actions into line with her values, she left her management career and founded the Atlanta Day Shelter for Women. Dave and Gray Sandness of Minnesota adopted 9 children, but you need to know this, all of the children were handicapped that they adopted. Everyone has priorities, she said. You can go for the big house and the fancy cars, or you can do everything you can to help people, says Mrs. Sandness, who uses a wheelchair herself. It's a decision and a choice that you make. What do you do out of love because you've decided to love people?
Well, we'll continue this message tomorrow on Cross Hope as we continue a message from 1 John, the 3rd chapter, on the subject of love, the definition of love from 1 John 3:16. Let it speak to you all this week. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
What do you do out of love because you've decided to love people? Every wedding I conduct, I say the statement that Annie, my wife, doesn't agree with, but I say love is a decision. That people don't fall in love, they decide to love. And we go round and round. She says, no, people do fall in love. And I said, no, they don't. They decide to love. And so we'll never settle that argument in the rest of our lives. But I believe that love is a decision. You decided to love your spouse. There was a day, you may not remember it, but there was a point in time where you made a decision to love another person. And when you love somebody, you do something to that person that's so powerful. Do you know what you do when you love somebody? I talked about this recently. We look at people to see how valuable they are in terms of their contribution to our lives, and then we make a decision to love them. Okay, he's valuable, he'll help me. She's valuable, she can help my life, and I'll love them. But we create value in people's lives when we love them. Andrew Hensley was a missionary from Indianapolis, Indiana, in the beginning of the 1900s. He went to work with a tribe on the Congo River in Africa. First thing he found out, these people don't have written language. No books, no dictionary. Nothing. So in order to convey the gospel to them, he had to do a very basic thing. He had to learn their language. So, you know, he literally learned the language by doing a simple thing that I couldn't think of anything better. He started by pointing to a chair. He said to someone, what is this? And the person said, Bosai, B-O-S-A-I. He said, good, wrote it down, B-O-S-O-I, Bosai. He pointed to a window, what's that? And they said, Bosai. What's the sky up there? What's that? And he said, Bosai. Everything he pointed to was Bosai. He found out the word Bosai meant finger. Isn't that great? He said the people in that tribe pointed by jutting out their lower lip at something. Now, you don't have to do it now, but later look at the person next to you and see what happens when you jut out your lower lip. I don't know. That could be dangerous, I suppose, if you don't know the person. But that's how they pointed to things. And he started writing down the words of the language. But here's the interesting thing. He found out in his discovery process that they had no word for love. There was no word in their language to explain love. And he wondered, how do I convey the love of God and the love of Christ? And he heard a mother holding a small child saying a word over and over again, the word Okefi. I don't even know how to spell it, but that's what she would say over and over. So he asked someone who could communicate with him, what is Okefi meant? And here's what the person said. He said, Andrew, it means that this mother cares for her little girl so much that when she thinks of what the years may mean ahead for her, that she hurts. Interesting description. She cares so much for her little girl that when she thinks, what do the years mean in the future for her, it hurts her, it gives her pain. And Andrew Hensley said, I finally had my expression. I knew the words I needed. He said that he described the love that Christ had for us, that Jesus cares for us so much that it hurt. He loved us so much that it hurt. Now, here's where I want to go with this. This is sad to say, but I believe it's true. There are husbands in this room who don't have a word for love in their own home. And there are wives and mothers who perhaps don't have a word for love, and there are parents that don't have a word for love for their children, and children who don't have a word for love, and love is never expressed. And I want to share something with you, that love that's never expressed is not experienced. Write that down. Love that is not expressed is not experienced, and it's how people experience love is when we're told that we're loved. And you know, there's nothing that invigorates a person more emotionally and psychologically and psychically to have someone say, I love you. Let's bring up verse 23, which I consider to be one of the most important verses in the whole Bible. And this is his command. Whose command? Christ's command. To believe in the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and to love one another as he commanded us. If you want to distill Christianity down to one verse, here's a good one. To believe in the name of God's Son, Jesus Christ. What does that mean? You believe everything that name represents. Your name represents you. That's why you don't like people making fun of your name, because your name represents you. Maybe you've had people make fun of your name and you still remember from childhood somebody making fun of your name, your first name or last name. You didn't like it. Why? Because it represents you. And so it is that we are to believe in the name of his Son and everything that represents. And then to love one another as Christ commanded us. He didn't ask us. He commanded us. I close with a true story told by a minister from Nashville, Tennessee, by the name of Rubel Shelley. Some people came out of the second service and says, we know Rubel. He's a family friend. Rubel is a great writer. He talks about a Jason Tusk, T-U-S-K, who was a 17-year-old high school honor student. He was close to his mother, his wheelchair-bound father, and his young brother, Christian, had a brother named Christian. Jason was an expert swimmer who loved to scuba dive. He left home on a Tuesday morning to explore an underwater spring and an underwater cave near his home in West Central Florida. His plan was to be home in time to celebrate his mother's birthday by going out to dinner with the family that night. But something happened. Something went terribly wrong. You see, Jason became lost in the underwater cave. In his panic, he apparently got wedged in a narrow passageway. When he realized that he was trapped, he took off his yellow metal air tank and unsheathed his diver's knife. With the tank as a tablet and the knife as a pen, he wrote one last message to his family. I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I love you, Christian. Then he ran out of air and drowned. Rubel Shelley says this, a dying message, something communicated in the last few seconds of life, is something that you can't ignore. God's final words to us are etched on a Roman cross. They are blood red. They scream to be heard. They too say, I love you. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. You and I, he says, may not die a dramatic death like Jason, but he says, let me tell you this, we're all etching a message of love or something else on a tablet called our lives. Every man in this room, every woman in this room, every young person, you're writing out a message on the tablet of your life, and it's either a message of love or it's something else. How would people describe the message you're writing with your life? I have a feeling we'd all be shocked. We all would be a little shocked to find out how people perceive the message of our life. But today, I'm asking you to decide, to realize that love, the real test of love, is laying down your life. Christ laid down his life for us. The way you love people is you divest yourself of something in your life. You give up part of yourself, and you lay it down for the cause of Christ and out of love for other people. Well, I hope this series from the epistle or letter of 1 John is speaking to you in a powerful way. Next week in chapter 4, the Apostle John says to test the spirits to see if they are from God. We live in a spiritual world. That doesn't mean it's a Christian world by any stretch, but everything is spiritual. There's a spiritual dimension to everything we interact with in life. And John says, test the spirits to see if they're from Christ, to see if they're from the Lord. God bless you. I hope you'll listen next week to Cross Hope.
You have been listening to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. For more information or to listen to or download a copy of today's message, go to crosshope.org. That web address again is www.crosshope.org. Be sure to tune in each weekday at this same time to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. This program has been a production of Cross Hope Ministries.